greetings. I'm Dharaveda Pragyananda. Some people call me Dharaveda, whichever you use, no problem. Today, we're going to look at a topic which I've entitled, Why is there evil in this world when there is a perfect all-knowing God? So this is what we're going to look at. Now, some people tell me that this is a very timely topic because so many bad things are happening in the world and so many incongruities. If there's a good God, then why is the world bad? But actually, this is not a timely topic. This is a timeless topic. In fact, if you go back to the Bible, the book of Job is really wrestling with this issue of why is there evil in the world. In that story, there is a man named Job who is a very pious person. He has a nice family and a good life and everything is fine. So up in heaven or somewhere, there is the adversary, or Satan or devil or whatever, makes a bet with God. He says, oh, this Job only praises, loves you because he's doing well. But if adversity comes to him, he's going to just forget about you and curse you. So God says, let's take this bet. Let's see what happens. So God took away the good fortune of Job and gave all kinds of calamities to him. His children die, his family is ruined, his business is gone, his prosperity is gone, even his health is under attack from nature. So that book is wrestling with this problem. In the end, finally, God gives back everything to Job. But spoiler alert, if you haven't read it. But it was an issue that people felt long before, that we see in this world that good people are being crushed, bad people are lifted up, and they're being celebrated. Why is this? How can this be? So, in fact, this issue is so perplexing that there's even a very noted biblical scholar, his name is Bart Ehrman, and he confessed, he says, I'm an atheist these days. And then he said, why is he an atheist? Because this world is so horrible and God is supposed to be good. So this is a contradiction. Even a great biblical scholar couldn't accept it. But yoga really explains it. So I want to look at it from the point of view of the yoga philosophy, especially as interpreted by Sri Sri Anandamurti. So basic thing is that there is an order to this universe. It's not a chaos. In fact, we call the universe cosmos, and cosmos means order. Some things are in a certain way. So there is a special arrangement to this universe. And if we understand the arrangement, then we can understand seeming incongruities, seeming things which don't work out. And there are a lot of ways to look at this. First thing we're going to look at is that there is a cosmic order in which one undifferentiated consciousness undergoes metamorphosis, and the one becomes many and one part of the cycle. And then there's another part of a cycle where many become one. This is called the Brahma Chakra, the cycle of God, the cosmic cycle. So there are two basic forces in this cosmic cycle. One force is pushing people and entities, everybody, towards greater consciousness. It's liberating. And there's another force called avidya, which is propelling people, propelling matter, propelling consciousness away from the center. So vidya means knowledge. The force propelling you towards more light is called vidya. Avidya means without knowledge. And so there's a tension in this universe of these two forces. Sometimes the avidya force is dominant, and we go into darkness. And sometimes vidya, and there's a play. There is a cycle going on. This is the cosmic cycle. And if you only look at one part of it, then you could be fooled into thinking, well, that's the way it is. If you only look at one part of a big, even if you can look at history in this world, if you look at one part of history, you come in at the wrong time, and you get the wrong picture of the whole part. So that's why people say that if those who don't study history are condemned to repeat, because we make similar mistakes. But if we look at the whole picture, we get a different thing. So if we look at this universe as a play or a movement of consciousness, movement away from consciousness and back towards consciousness, and we see that there are two tugging forces in this thing, then we can understand why sometimes adversity, seemingly what seems to be adversity, triumphs, and sometimes more light and more knowledge comes up. So it's just a play of these things. But it's not a chaos, it's a cosmos. There is an order. And there is also a divine part of this, which I will get into, but first we'll look at some other things about it. There's another reason why we mistake the present situation and we come to the wrong conclusions about it. And that's because we humans have a very short life. We have a very short life here. We have a segment we come in for, and then we come into this world and we depart one day. Everybody, nobody, there's no exception to that. And what happens is when we do motion, we work, and for every action, there comes a reaction. We know that from physics, but in the psychic sphere, it's a little bit different. The reactions are not equal and opposite because the time changes, the person changes, the place changes. So if I hit you now and you don't hit me, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to get hit. Maybe I will get hit, but it's delayed. And maybe sometime in a certain place, in a certain time, this reaction will come, but it will come stronger. It will come with interest. So that's the thing. So now what happens, according to the yoga concept, not everyone believes this, but according to the yoga concept, is that we create lots of momentum from the actions that we do, and the reactions are not coming immediately. So what will happen? So you say, oh, I died, now I'm out of it. I did all these bad things, I escaped. Just like the person who you think is a very bad person, he's doing all these bad things now, but he's not getting punished. He escaped. Then he dies. Then you think, oh, now he's been spared. No, because according to the yoga concept, he's reborn again. We get reborn again. The reason why we get reborn again is because there's momentum. There's reactive momentum, sankskara. Commonly people call it karma. So we get reborn again. We have consciousness, and the consciousness has a what they call a bundle of sankskaras, a bundle of momenta. And that bundle of momenta propels that consciousness. It is like an interim state when there's no body. And it propels it to find a body where it could express. So that's what's happening in our lives. So what's happening is that we're creating momentum. We're doing things, and the reactions, sometimes they come immediately, but usually it's delayed. And the interesting thing about it is most of the reactions that we're facing in this life, you got an accident and this thing happened to you and that thing happened to you, is actually not from this life, it's from the past life. So that's why we say, you know, oh, why did this thing happen to this poor guy? He never did anything wrong. And then he was afflicted by this disease and his mother died, his father died. And we say, this is unjust. He's such a nice person. He never did anything wrong. Why? The reason is the reactions from the past. So the reactions from the past are seen. And you're only seeing part of the picture. You don't know why it happened. And similarly, the good person now, he's doing good, but he's not getting the reward. She is not getting, or anybody is not getting that reward. But it can come in the future. But it may not be in this life. It usually will not. The things you do now will usually bear fruition in a future life. This is actually how the law of action and reaction work, and karma and reincarnation. So it's very difficult to draw a complete picture from the life cycle of a single person. We don't know. But we have to say that the yogis say, the theists, people who believe in God, we say it's benevolent, it's benign, it's good. And benevolence is built into the whole system. Even if you study physics, you'll see it. If gravity was any stronger than it presently is, the universe would collapse. It's just right. It's like it's the Goldilocks of physical laws that we have that allow a universe to be formed. It's not a joke that we have a universe that's formed and that can last long enough and water can come and then life can come. Even once I have a pond, I'm looking at a pond right now in front of me. And someone once remarked, he asked about the fishes. I say, we have a lot of fish. They stay in the bottom of the lake. It's 28 feet deep. And he said, yeah, that's the fortunate thing about nature, because if water freezes from the top and not doesn't go all the way to the bottom, if it froze from the bottom up, then life like fishes and the frogs, they wouldn't last to the next season. So it's benevolent. The universe is benevolent. It's allowing life to exist. In fact, we say Saguna Brahma, that this is the Brahma which has become form in this universe, has one goal. And what is that goal? Is to liberate each of us. And the different obstacles that we face in our life, they have to teach us something. So we have to learn from the mistakes. That's why it's nature teaches you, like you put your hand into the fire, oh, it burns. So you have to learn. We have to learn. So that's all the different obstacles are helping us to learn more and more. And our job is to follow and to learn, to do it. And so we have to look at it like that. And we have to look at it in one more way. It's a lila. There's a Sanskrit word, lila. It means cosmic play. It's a drama. So it's the God's lila. It's the divine play. And in that play, it's a drama. Sometimes the heroes win. Sometimes the villains are on top and they're wrestling and they're fighting. But it's educative is the word I'm searching for. It's trying to teach us something. And this brings me to a story that goes back from the ancient Indian epic, which is the Mahabharata. And that was also a story of good versus evil. There were five cousins, five brothers, and they faced their 100 cousins in a big epic battle, the Mahabharata, a war, and it decimated a lot of India. Actually, it's historical, even though the epic, the Mahabharata, is kind of a Purana, which is like a play. It's not exact history, but it's a moral story based on the history. So in this moral story, the good people win. The Pandavas, they're called, they win. And they slay, their 100 cousins get slayed in this battle. So at the end of the battle, the mother of the 100 cousins, the Kauravas they're called, comes to, her name is Gandhari. She's a very pious lady. So she came and met Krishna. Now Krishna is in this drama too. He's driving a chariot. He's the charioteer. But he doesn't play any role in the war. But Gandhari understood that Krishna was the divine dramatist, that he looked at it as the incarnation of God, you can say. So Gandhari said, look, you're the Taraka Brahma. You're the one who's created this whole drama. Why did you do this? Why did you make this war? Why did my sons have to die? Krishna said, "This, if I would have waved the wand, yes, everything would have been peaceful and nice, but humanity wouldn't learn a lesson. They wouldn't learn that when you follow Dharma or spirituality, you progress. And when you go against it, you go into materialism, you fail. Humanity wouldn't learn this lesson. And Gandhari says, okay, I understand. But why did you cast my sons in the role of the evildoers? So she had Krishna couldn't say anything. So Krishna let her curse him in a sense. He had nothing to say about that. He could have actually said that. You know, he could have said, of course, that their past karma, they were born like this. But he didn't say that. He let her be. But the point is, it's a history. Is an educative drama, and we should learn from it. the best we can, we should learn the best we can. Sometimes we can't learn enough because we didn't understand enough, but we should try to learn the lessons of history. But we should also understand that behind this cosmic drama, there is a benevolent being, a benevolent supreme being guiding us, and that spirituality or vidya is stronger than avidya. It will triumph, and every particle will become animate, and animate will go on to greater consciousness, and all will merge. It will get liberated. This is the goal. This is the divine play. So if we look at a part of the whole thing, you look at a part of a person's life, you look at a part of a historical drama that's going on, you don't understand the full thing, you won't understand it. So try to understand it and accept it. But this universe is a good place to be. It's a beautiful place. When beings come into the world, I've come. That's how their feeling is. They want to be. Everyone wants to stay in this world. We don't want to go out of it. So this is a benevolent place. It's a good place. And it's a proof that there is a benevolent being. And it's not a condemnation of the concept of a divine and good being. That's the way I look at it. So I hope that others will also. So that's all I wanted to say. It's a kind of a difficult topic, I understand. And I know you have your opinions, and you can, if you're watching here on Facebook or on YouTube, just put it into the comments and write to me. You can scream at me, yell at me also, whatever. But I know there are many points. I mentioned this recently on some platform. Someone said, no, it's because Satan let me take up this concept of Satan also. Yes, some people say that the God is good, but there's Satan. Satan's bad, and Satan is making all the mess. We believe in one monotheism, one God. It can't be a Satan. Satan, there cannot be a separate God. There's not a separate, there are two, there's only one God. So, but if you want to think about the evil or darkness, think about the avidya force. That's part of the cycle, vidya avidya. That's part of it. But it's not a separate God, and it's not a God that's stronger than the benevolent God. No. So that's it. In a nutshell, the universe is good, and God is good, and they work together, and there's no contradiction whatsoever.